sky's so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. Call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, hey, it's a sunny day.
It's just a sunny day.
It's the KSL Greenhouse. Expert tips for flowers, trees, gardens, and soil. Our hosts are Maria Chaleos and Ton Bettis on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse, a shortened edition this morning. We are making way for BYU men's basketball. It's BYU versus Texas, and our pregame begins at 11 with a tip-off at noon. So if you have questions, you want to get your calls in now at 801-575-8255, or you can text us at 57500. Wanted to start out the morning, top of the hour, 9 o'clock feature is blackberries. Selecting blackberries that are best for our area, as well as managing them once you get them in the ground. So let's start out with how do people select the best blackberries for our area?
Well, some of it is going to be what you want out of a blackberry, but we are as far north as you can get and somewhat reliably grow blackberries. There are some hardier varieties out there, but you know, it becomes slim pickings when you get much colder than the Wasatch Front. Just for example, and we'll get into better varieties, but the most cold hardy blackberry out there is called Illini Hardy. And you really have got to want blackberries if you grow Illini Hardy, because it is a good berry, but it's as thorny as you can get. And so even wearing a long sleeve shirt and some sort of gloves to pick them, you will be cut up. And so I knew people.
Well, that doesn't sound fun.
No, but I knew people in Cache Valley that were just like, well, this is how they grow in the forest. And they did grow Illini Hardy, and they were a pretty good berry. They have, and I don't know what this really means, but it says, well, they have that wild blackberry taste. You know, I don't want the cultivated taste. I want the wild taste. And so, you know, more power to you.
I have no idea what that means.
I don't either, but that's how it was described. And I had more than one person tell me that.
I believe
but,
them.
I mean, for the more reasonable people, for our gentle listeners that don't want the adventure of Illini Hardy blackberry, there are several thornless varieties that do really well along the Wasatch Front. And we've posted a fact sheet that Dr. Brent Black and Sheridan Hansen, among others, did the work for to gauge cold hardiness, or at least winter injury, in blackberries. And they've listed several varieties from the most hardy to the least hardy as far as winter damage. And the three that I usually recommend from this work, there's one called Navajo, and it's spelled N-A-V-A-H-O, so Navajo, then Chester, which is going to be very hardy, and then another one called Triple Crown. And those three seem to do relatively well, and when we get down near zero or a little colder, a lot of the branches survive, and you can get a good crop the next year.
Okay. So that's
three good varieties. There's others out there, Apache. And so when you're purchasing blackberries, the ones you want to avoid are what are called trailing blackberries. And they're the varieties grown in the Pacific Northwest. And many of these are also thornless, but they are only hardy down to about 10 to 15 degrees. And so only on the warmest areas of the Wasatch Front will they survive. So I'm talking Loganberry, Dewberry, Marionberry, some of these famous ones that you can get the syrups and jams and things. They're not hardy here. And I don't know, unless you're just a hobbyist, I don't know that I would want to put the time into growing these trailing blackberries. You know, if you lived in Moab or St. George, where it can get a little warm, you could maybe try them there.
Mm-hmm.
But you want the what are called erect or semi-erect blackberries. And these are going to go more straight up like a raspberry would. And so the Illini Hardy, the Chester, Triple Crown, all of these are semi-erect or erect blackberries. So you're going to actually grow them a little bit more like you would a raspberry, to where you're going to trellis them, and you're going to let them just plant the starts, and you usually buy them as a rooted cutting in a 6-inch pot from a nursery. Plant it, let it grow for a year or two, but we have a fact sheet posted on maintenance. And like raspberries, once you get them established, they generally fruit on one-year-old canes. And so this year's new growth will be next year's berries. And so the terms in the fact sheet are primacane and floracane. Just remember, prime is first year and floracane is the second year, flora implying flowering. And so once those canes or branches have produced the berries, if anybody from ESU is listening, I use that term loosely. I know they're not really berries, but once you harvest the blackberries, in the fall or winter, those canes that you harvested from are cut out. And then the new growth is trimmed back. And there's some instructions in there on trellising the blackberries, but to maintain them properly and to keep their size in check, you're always cutting out the canes that produce fruit in the winter after they produced.
Right. Sounds like the biggest thing people do wrong is they cut the wrong canes.
They do. Or they don't cut at all. And so, I mean, there's those folks out there that just run these on a chain link fence and they act kind of like a screen. But you do that and the fruit production is reduced a little bit and they can get 30 to 40 feet long, you know, wide.
Wow.
Massive. And so if you are growing blackberries for food production exclusively, you know, in a garden situation, there's instructions on how wide your rows need to be, how to trellis them, and how to increase your productivity and make the fruit a little bit sweeter.
Okay. Anything else you want to add?
I'll start looking for blackberries between March and mid-May, and there's several varieties out there. You can look them up online. But again, if you're the Loganberry berries, the Dewberries, the Marion berries, the famous varieties out of the Pacific Northwest, unfortunately, just aren't hardy along the Wasatch Front.
Okay. The top of the hour feature has been blackberries, how to choose them, and how, again, to manage them. And you can find more information on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. If you're just tuning in, you can find our show, the entire show, in podcast form shortly after the show airs. So if you miss the discussion, you can catch it there as well. Get your phone calls in now, only about 45 minutes till the top of the hour, and that means we will go to BYU basketball at that point in time, so you want to get your calls in before then. 801-575-8255. Text us, 57500. Good morning. Thanks for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. Phone lines are open. You can text us at 57500. Next listener, Ton, is very unhappy with the squirrels in the 9th and 9th area. This person has beautiful lilies in pots that bloom every spring, and then they die back. And they just leave them in the pots, and the rest of the year they get water and snow, you know, from the snow and stuff, and then they bloom again the next year. But the squirrels have decided to dig up a lot of the bulbs to eat, and they're wondering what they can do to discourage the squirrels from eating the bulbs. Last year, they ate the bulbs out of their window boxes. Good grief, squirrels.
They're going to have to cover the bulbs. And so
some sort of netting?
You'd probably need metal netting. So metal screening like you'd put into your windows and cut it to fit over the window box. But then I would fasten it to some boards, some 2x4s or 1x2s.
They can just move them, right?
Yeah, so you can just roll them up and move them when the bulbs start to grow. And there's other food sources out there. And that way, if they needed to, they could screw the wood down or clamp it to the boxes and then just take it off and put it in a shed for the summer. If the bulbs are in the ground, you can cover them with boards or use something similar to where you're covering the area with that metal screening and the wood stones, anything along those lines. But you know that that's going to have to be moved in early to mid-March when the bulbs start to sprout.
Okay, nothing like squirrels. And then
oh man,
people say, "Oh, they're so cute," but they leave behind a mess. They dig up your tulip bulbs and they leave the husks.
They do.
If you're going to eat my bulbs, at least don't make a mess.
Add insult to injury.
Right.
Yeah, there's a new species over the last 10 years that's been coming north out of Texas, and it's followed the Rio Grande drainage and the Colorado River drainage north, and we're starting to see this non-native, when I say that, to Utah squirrel in yards and things. And last time I checked, and it's been a couple of years, the state was unsure if they wanted to declare it noxious or invasive or just let nature run its course because it's come in naturally, but we don't know how much human influence was there on it. And so this new squirrel seems to be a little bit more adapted to living in urban areas. And I think that's part of the reason we've been seeing more squirrels in our neighborhoods.
Our next listener is making a suggestion that I'd like you to comment on, this having to do with the coddling moth and the pears that we talked about. And they're saying if you don't like to spray your fruit trees, you can bag your fruit to avoid coddling moth. They say it's a lot of work, but it helps to thin the pears and avoid bird pecks, too.
It does. You can buy the bags on Amazon and potentially from local retailers. And depending on the style of bag, it can be a thick paper bag that has the metal clips, almost like, I'm trying to remember, they're the metal that you can fold over on some of the foods, like the Mint Milano cookies used to have them from Pepperidge Farms, that you'd fold the bag over and then fold the metal clips.
Oh, uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And so you can buy bags like that. There's several styles. And if you thin your pears, as the pears grow, you can put these bags on the pears and they work well. But as they mentioned, it's labor intensive. We've had that gentleman on in the past that was selling the entire tree nets that you
right.
had to prune the trees a bit, but you can net the entire stinking tree and keep them out. And so there are some non-pesticide alternatives out there, but you just have to adjust accordingly.
Do the pesticides, are they harming us? Is there any research that shows that these pesticides are dangerous for us?
Sometimes, yes. I mean, I think that there's definitely a movement out there and a political movement trying to get these things banned that I think the intentions are far more than just our safety. You know, I don't want to get too much into politics, but yeah, there's examples of pesticides harming us. Every time you go to the bathroom, you excrete a certain amount of DDT and glyphosate every time. That's just in our bodies. You know, is that harmful? More and more research is showing that glyphosate, we may need to check its use a bit, especially in big industrial ag. Dicamba is another one. So there are definitely examples out there. And so people have been more and more hesitant to use pesticides, and I get it. You know, I'm in the same boat. But you can spray the trees organically, and these organic sprays are oftentimes going to break down faster and there's not going to have as much of a residual. But the trade-off is you're potentially going to have a few more little beasties in your fruit that you don't want, and you're probably going to have to spray a little more often and have the timing there so that you spray at the right time because the residual isn't as long. But, you know, there's the fruit bags, there's the nets you can use. But if you're not netting or bagging your fruit, you're doing your entire neighborhood a disservice with you being the ones like, oh, we're environmentally conscious, we're not going to spray our fruit. Well, you're the source of diseases and pests for the neighborhood by not doing that.
Wow. It's a fine line to walk, isn't it?
It is.
All right. Jane is on the line in Salt Lake City. Good morning, Jane. What was your question this morning?
Oh, I just need to know when and how low you cut hydrangeas when they're through blooming.
I wouldn't cut them. And so you need to know the kind of hydrangea you have, because some of them bloom on new growth and some of them bloom on one-year-old wood. And if you need to prune them, I would use a technique called renewal pruning, where you're taking 20% of the branches out from near the base of the shrub every mid-March and leaving mm-hmm. everything else behind. and that will help keep the size in check, but still have the potential there for the maximum amount of blooms. But don't just go out there and shear them unless you know what you have.
Okay, that's good advice. And also I need to know, when you buy the amaryllis in the stores and they have this little plastic bowl around the roots, do you cut that off and put it in new soil, or do you just water through that bowl?
It depends on your plan. If you're just going to dispose of it when it's done blooming, don't go to the effort. But if you're going to keep it for years, definitely transplant it into a pot.
Oh, okay. That's all my questions, and thank you very much.
All right, Jane, thanks for your call this morning. Next listener lives in Utah County. They have found pennycress growing as well as henbit growing in their flower beds. Can they spray for those weeds now so they don't multiply in the spring?
It's too cold to spray for to get a lot of impact from any spray. They could, if the beds are bare, get a weed torch and crisp them up a little bit. You're not going to start a fire in the middle of the winter unless there's debris all over in the flower beds. Because the soil's wet and frozen, there's little risk. And that would be a great way to get some satisfaction.
All right. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500.
The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse Show. I missed one of our callers that asked us about the golden privet earlier, Ton. That is the plant of the week, and whether it tolerates wind.
It's fine in the wind. I mean, if you live in South Weber, up in Weber County, or mouth of some of our canyons, it'll do fine in the wind. It has fairly waxy leaves. You know, like I said, when I worked in the nursery industry and in college, I did a lot of small scale landscaping and landscape maintenance, just, you know, starving students. And one of the go-to plants for a home company we did some contract work for was golden privets. And they planted them everywhere, you know, South Weber, Layton, Kaysville, Farmington, out in West Warren, anywhere they built. And in every situation, they did fine. And
well, this person actually wants to know if they'll do well in the middle of Nebraska.
They would be okay. I mean, they're deer candy. And so the deer will get them if they're not protected from that. But as long as the temperatures don't drop below about minus 10, they'll be fine because they're a zone 5, zone 6 plant. And so warmer areas of Cache Valley, they do just fine. Up in Heber, they're okay, but I wouldn't go much colder than that.
And they're saying, is it an evergreen or deciduous?
Semi-evergreen. And so in St. George, they would be an evergreen. But here along the Wasatch Front, they will hold their leaves through November, and the leaves start to drop in December.
Okay. And again, that was the plant of the week. You can find more on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. Next listener wants to know, is it time to spray cherry trees? And if so, what do they spray them with?
Nah, I'd relax. Go golfing. Take a nap.
Golf?
Yeah.
Maybe today.
Real hard to say, tranquilo. You know, that sort of thing. It's too early to spray. Right now, you know, even with this warmer weather, things are still dormant. It's the time you start spraying is when you start to see fast bud expansion, but before the leaves open.
Next listener wants to know, will sodium chloride snowmelt damage the lawn?
Absolutely. Any salt will damage the lawn. Sodium chloride is the worst. And so you can use a little on your driveway, but it's also the most damaging to cement. And so I personally, even though the water softener salt is the cheapest, it's actually not a great ice melt. Water freezes at a higher temperature with its use. It's really damaging to pavement. It's damaging to your lawns. You want to use one of the others. Then they'll say, you know, more environmentally friendly. There's some greenwashing there still, but there are much better ice melts that will melt the ice at lower temperatures and not be nearly as damaging to your plants and to the pavement and to the environment.
Next listener says, with Transjordan out of the compost business, can you recommend a reasonably priced source of good compost or even a high quality topsoil garden soil.
You know, I've been seeing municipality cities getting out of the green waste business. It's costly.
Oh.
You know, Southern Utah County, in Utah County, there was a circuit of cities that were was sharing the mulch and compost equipment to shred the bark up or in the wood up from trees and pallets and things.
Mm-hmm.
And the equipment itself is very expensive, but then you'd have to transport it from site to site to get your turn. And it just was costing taxpayers a lot of money. And I was really torn on the whole thing because now all that wood is just going into the landfill, you know, the branches and the trimming, the tree trimmings and things. And they're telling people to get a shredder and compost it or mulch it at home. Nobody's really doing that. You know, we haven't had a flood of people buying branch shredders and things. But it was also costing the taxpayers quite a bit of money to manage these.
But also creating, I mean, such a good service for
it
taxpayers.
It is. And so I don't...
You take your pickup out there.
In my opinion, it wasn't managed really efficiently, and it could have been managed much more efficiently than what they were doing. But there are still cities out there doing it. Springville City in Utah County, Payson City still has green waste. Up in Weber, Davis, Layton City Dump has it, which actually takes into its service area several cities in northern Davis County. And so it's still out there. But if you get compost from a garden center, it is usually going to be more expensive. But, you know, if you're getting local companies, Nutrimulch, Oakdale Egg Farms, they've put a lot of time into trying to make sure it does have the quality there. And any compost, you want to be careful and put it down in the fall and incorporate it into the ground in the fall so that it has time to break down. And if there happens to be any salts or anything in there, they have time to work their way through the soil so that plants aren't harmed in the spring.
Yeah, there are so many great companies out there. You probably want to just price around. Nothing's cheap.
No.
They have to make a living, right? So you've got your Replenish, the Dirt Bag, and Biograss. All of these companies offer these products, and at certain times they mark them down. They put them on sale.
Especially
early in the season. So you want to listen for those sales.
Yeah, and if you're looking for the bargain basement prices from the landfills, the best I could really tell you to do, because I don't live in the Salt Lake City area, is look on municipalities' websites where their landfills are and see who is still offering green waste material. And they're still out there, but they are becoming less common.
All right. Next person says they had a small fairy ring in their lawn, so they planted a dwarf mugo pine near that fairy ring. Well, not because of or instead of. But they say that the pine is getting some reddish tips, and they're wondering if it's that fungus.
No, it's not. Reddish tips are a sign of environmental stress. It could be salt if it's near a walkway and had snow piled around it. It could have been drought stress. And the tips of the needles are starting to scorch. It could be that it's a new plant and doesn't have the root mass necessary to get it through the winter. And so what I would do is just make sure that you're not getting any salt on it. And we've had enough rain that the soil is probably moist, but they're just going to have to be patient.
They also planted a scallywag holly in the north, which has a north exposure. It's not getting any new leaves or growing. What could be wrong?
Well, it wouldn't get any new leaves now, and the hollies are just a marginal plant here, except for the blue hollies and, in protected areas, English holly. And so the scallywag holly, I'm looking up the species right now. I've seen it out there. Oh, and of course, they don't have the species on it.
Well, we're going to take a break. Why don't
okay,
we come back
let's do that.
Give you a few minutes to do a little
okay.
bit of research on that. And number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us, 57500. Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton with taking your calls and questions. Next listener, Ton, says, can they overseed their lawn now before more snow comes?
Oh, they can. The seed won't germinate, and you run into the risk of if birds find it, they may pick some of the seed out. And the seed will just sit there until late March into April when the soil's warm enough for it to germinate. But they absolutely can.
Okay, next listener says, what are the pros and cons of vegetable grow boxes versus just rows? They say they think that their grow boxes need to be solarized again, and they're considering just reverting back to old traditional rows.
The advantage to just traditional gardening in your native soil is that you don't need a lot of inputs to make it happen. It's the least expensive way to garden. The more raised beds, containers, things that you do like that, the more expensive gardening becomes, as they obviously know. And so that's the advantage. The disadvantage is as you age and it becomes harder to bend over and stoop for a long period of time, that it becomes less and less practical. The last year my dad gardened, he had to lay on his side to pull weeds because it was the only position that was comfortable enough to do it. And so you hit that point where the only way you're going to be able to garden is some form of raised bed. Other things with raised beds is that if you have bad soil that's really salty or too clay, they can work. But the expense is the biggest thing with the raised beds and the containers.
Okay, next person wants to know, how do you maintain cherry bushes, specifically the Romeo and Juliets?
The Romeo and Juliet are dwarf cherries that are super cold hardy that have a sweeter berry. And there's a few ways you could do it. You could treat them just like a little cherry tree. If you wanted to grow them as a bush, you could use renewal pruning on them. But I would recommend growing them as a small cherry tree. We don't really have a lot of time to cover the pruning, but I would look up some fact sheets or YouTube videos on pruning cherries, and that will give them some ideas.
Plus, it's hard to describe over the radio, right?
I wanted to really quick that scallywag holly.
Mm-hmm.
It is a blue holly, and it will do fine here. They're slow growing, and even then, every once in a while, they're a little hit and miss. But on the north side of your home, you're going to be lucky to get 6 inches a year out of them. Maybe just a couple tablespoons of fertilizer in late March to try to spur some growth, but don't expect that it's going to grow super fast.
And you're not going to see it start get new leaves until when now?
Well, it should hold its leaves over the winter, but the new growth will come out in May.
Okay. Next listener, Ryan, would like to know, what kind of aspen tree would you plant for a small backyard grove in the foothills of Utah County?
If you have the property, any old aspen will work. But if it's a manicured yard, I would plant no aspen just because they sucker all over the place. They're short lived. And yeah, you're taking away that woodsy feel of the yard. But
especially
I would
a small backyard.
Yeah, I would find a different tree.
Is it a good time to prune a black lace elderberry?
Give it until mid-March and use renewal pruning on there. Look that up online, but you can keep the size down a little bit and generate a lot of new growth, but mid-March.
Isn't straight nitrogen a good snowmelt for sidewalks?
The fertilizers are salts, and so they will melt ice, and it's not unheard of for cities to use fertilizer in their mix, something like ammonium nitrate or ammonium sulfate, to melt the snow because it is salts melt ice. It can be damaging to your cement, and there are less expensive things out there. But yes, it will melt ice.
Next listener is growing a Arapahoe blackberry in a big container. Is there something's an Arapahoe auto
spell check.
They did actually fix it later. Arapahoe blackberry in a big container. Is there something special they should be fertilizing with?
No, it's going to the Arapahoe. I mean, it is going to get some size and they're going to need to watch that. But because it's in a container, I would use Osmocote or a liquid Miracle-Gro type fertilizer regularly on it because they do require a lot of nitrogen in a container.
An unusual question. Is there any way to prevent fruit trees, peach trees, from producing fruit?
A pruning cut at the base is the easiest way.
Usually we want more fruit. This person wants less fruit.
There's a product called Floral Growth Eliminator, growth regulator. They could see if those fruit trees are on label, but you would spray when they're in flower, but the trees seem to adapt from it. But short of removing the trees, not really.
Okay, under a minute here, Ton. They fought squash bugs last year. Any battle suggestions for this year?
Forgo growing squash for a year or two and see if they can reduce the numbers. So that's the biggest thing I can do. If the neighbors all have gardens, it may not work. But if you're fairly isolated, stopping growing squash for a year to 2 years and then beginning again for 3 or 4 years seems to be a great solution.
Okay, final question. Will a Corsican pine grow here?
I would have to look it up, but native to Corsica, probably not.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us this morning for the KSL Greenhouse. We'll be back next Saturday, 8 to 11. We do have BYU pregame coverage coming up next.